Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Arthur Noble from Knight Capital, and today you are listening to the Leaders of Growth podcast. This is the first and only podcast dedicated to scaling a company across Series A to C.
Today we discuss culture and founder challenges with our guest Felix Eichler, CTO and founder of UserLane and Forbes 30 under 30.
I'm Felix, and I originally started programming when I was 10. I don't know what my parents did there. And then my high school math teacher at the age of 15 sent me to uni because he said he can't teach me anymore. So I studied computer science at a really early age. And then through that, I realized I want to go beyond that and also work in a place that I really enjoy. And I enjoy the craftsmanship of software, but I think not many people on the global average enjoy working in the company. So this is why I got interested in entrepreneurship then and started a company when I was 20. And I'm now 25. We have gone through 3 funding rounds. The name of the company is UserLane, and we are a digital adoption platform. This means we help organizations, big and small, to tackle digital transformation. And we automate user onboarding, we train users in how to use software correctly, and we make sure that your workforce is going to be productive. And what I personally really like about it is that this also is a way of reducing anxiety and fear in the workplace, because we show people there is a path, right? And that digital transformation yet another tool and another change in the software, that it's not stressful, but it's something that's completely normal. The only constant on earth is change. And with UserLane, that's my way of making change more normal and more digestible.
That's a really great mission. And having worked in big multinationals in projects, I've definitely seen that it's needed because people are afraid of trying new tools. You're currently in your Series B stage of the company. So congrats to getting to this point already. What are some common pitfalls for companies in their Series A and in their Series B stage?
I think the biggest pitfall for growing companies is either not letting go of the details or letting go of the details way too much. It's really, really hard to strike the balance between those two. And it kind of starts with hiring, about who you bring on board, because you can, of course, provide some context, especially in the early stages. The smaller the team is, you get to spend proportionally more amount of time with every new hire, and you really build a strong culture. It's kind of everything's intuitive. People just do things. You also still yourself do things, and it keeps the train moving. But then when you grow, your role is going to be more with providing context rather than doing it by yourself. And also proportionally, the amount of FaceTime that you have with every single one is going to decrease. So that is a big challenge, because then you let go of the details because otherwise you can't process it anymore. And that is also a risk that then you need to learn how to delegate through context and how to still, even though you're not involved in the project, still have a way of setting the direction and setting the goalpost and then enabling your team to find their own way towards it. And this, I think, is the biggest pitfall, that either there is too little letting go of the details, which leads to micromanagement, which leads to also frustration in the team and leads to also cognitive overload for yourself, or letting go of all the details when you're not sometimes aggressive enough to pursue your goals, when the strategy is unclear, and finding the middle ground between this and striking a balance between both of these worlds is, I think, the biggest challenge you have coming from seed Series A and Series B, of really going from, let's say, 0 to 100 people. That's something I wanted to highlight.
Can you maybe share a bit like how you keep that balance between not micromanaging, but also not letting go too much?
It starts with hiring. And for hiring, ideally, you need to have some principles or some values about a really close definition of who you want to hire and what does culture fit really mean. If you never disqualified a candidate or maybe even fired someone because of cultural misfit, then how strong is your culture really? Just a question to think about. I think about managing this cognitive overflow, which I think is a typical founder challenge and is also related to, in the long term, not burning out, which also happens, I think, to some people, but it's not really talked about. And my tip here would be get yourself a hobby. Even though you have a bottomless pit of work and likely you enjoy your 10, 12 hours of work, but actually then even more, get a hobby that is really, really disconnected to what you're doing in the company. So for example, for me, this is singing and dancing. Dancing is also really good to keep up your relationship. And it also has the benefit that you really think about something different for some hours in the week. And I think that provides you with a lot of healthy distance to what's going on at the company and can reset your mind. And when it now comes to delegating things, you need to, when you go into Series B latest by then, you also need to delegate hiring. Setting goals and principles and values becomes more and more important. And in the early days of the company, if you have 20 people, you broadcast maybe a strategy or something of 1 to 20. But now if you have 100 people in the company, this factor of broadcast is a lot more, and that you need to be aware of. So how you set your goals, how you define your culture in written words matters more and more over time, because people get to be one-on-one with you less, relatively. And that is an effect that we should all be aware of.
I think that's definitely true. And also like the need to communicate becomes much, your strength of communication and those skills become more important as you start broadcasting more, as you say. It may be something as a central topic of this conversation to dive a bit into what are typical founder challenges going from C to A, Series A to B, maybe what you already foresee for the future.
So I already mentioned the cognitive overflow and managing yourself. And another thing that is distinct to founders that also in many, many cases your leadership team does not do for you is culture. And I think a big misconception is that many people fall prey to the delusion that you need to become corporate-y, enterprise-y, put a lot of rules in place, put a lot of policies in place, you know, really tightly manage this and these and that concerns. And I think there is a better way to do things. And there is a way to scale and to still make sure that things are going the right direction, but still maintaining this purpose, autonomy, and mastery that people really love of the startups, and providing this purpose, autonomy, mastery to your team at scale, that is a big challenge in culture. And it for me, it comes down to how you set your goals and how you measure people by output, outcome, you know, by how long they are in the office. I think also the trends of the home office also help a lot to move closer towards outcomes and what really has been achieved rather than just how hard people work. I think this can provide a lot of clarity in your culture. Also, what I see that another aspect is if you're all remote, then you need to remove the randomness from your processes. You can't just rely on people bumping into each other at the coffee machine and information flowing that way. You really need to structure it. You need to, you know, set up, for example, a bot that matches two people together of your company just to have a conversation, just to get to know each other. And I think managing culture when you're not directly, you know, working with everyone, and when you're not, maybe not even know all of them personally, that becomes a whole other game. And you said the communication skill is getting more important. I would say yes, totally, but also the style of communication that is expected from you is getting different, right? People expect different things from the leaders of the company when there's just 20 people around than when there is 100 people around. So also the expectations change, your communication needs to change, keeping this early startup coolness, the purpose of it, the impact of every single one. I think that's the magic thing that everyone tries to achieve.
How do you develop this culture and basically I try to keep it the same with 100 people as with 20?
It starts with the belief that it's not going to be the same. It's that, again, constant is the only change on earth. So what we make before, we know where we're going for funding, right? So it starts also with preparing your team for it, that, hey, there will be change coming because there is a lot more money to be spent. Many people look forward to this point also, but this will also mean that you're likely going to have a lot more things to do and to achieve, and that your goals are going to be really aggressive again, and that there is going to be new team members. And with that, culture will automatically change, even if you hire them for culture fit. And starting with that awareness, and then, as I also want to say, is written communication for me becomes more important, really how you define your culture in words, right? Also to attract talent, even like what does your career site or your job site look like? How is your culture represented there? Do you have an easy catching way to present your culture, much like your elevator pitch? You're not just selling to customers, you're also in a way selling to the market of talents. And you need to manage all of that. And the communication that lasts the longest is written one. So that's always a good skill to have.
Do you have some sort of like formal approach to writing down culture?
Approach that we've taken is not writing down our values with one word that you slam onto the wall, but defining guiding principles. And we have around 5 of them. And these are things like help the customer win. And then there is also a whole, paragraph about explaining what that means. So with help the customer win, we want to really understand how our product not just, is liked by the customer, and it doesn't just make them happy, but really helps them to win in their own market. And that is a really interesting thing. And this is a concept that is explained there in a few sentences. And also, we're going to have something like a culture board where we every 3 months also review how is our culture doing, right? Also, you can't just say these are the guiding principles, these are the values that we have, and then needing to stick to them. Even though the heart and the vision of your company doesn't change, culture might change. And the best approach is to also treat this openly and to repeatedly give your team a way to impact culture and to make it in a part also their company. And I think if you have the right team on board, then many people care about this because it's also their way to achieve purpose, autonomy, and mastery.
This is also a bit of like a personal question, which I found also very, very challenging, is that if you're with 3 founders, right? And basically with the 3 of you or with the founding team, it's quite easy then to come up with values and then basically make it your company, it's your baby where you start with. But then once you get like a large team in, you start implementing a culture board. And of course, you want to get like people from the team in there that will find things important, which you actually sometimes might not find important or actually have a completely different opinion on. How do you personally deal with that?
I think there is no golden answer here. Some people have different opinions, different views on things, is to put them into a bigger context and understand really why, and then try to integrate them and try to really see, maybe in principle or the objective that people have is the same. For example, saying we want to have a high degree of autonomy, really enable the team and move fast. And that I think sometimes, it looks like differences on the surface, but actually means the same thing. That's what I've taken a lot. And it would be surprising to me if people would have radically different opinions, because we're all at least in a very modern industry, right? So we are very much aware that with a product, you can change the world, and that it's a creative task to develop such a thing, and that it's not just the hours that people put in matter, but rather that you build the right things. And then this understanding of who we are in the industry, it already bases us on a really, really large common ground. And I haven't so far catched with anyone who fundamentally thinks different about culture. And there might be different details, but also there is the balance of letting go and still being in the details. Sometimes details can send a really, really big signal. And it's choosing of your battles that your culture won't be ruined by one small detail, but really also how things are explained, right? I said before, don't fall prey to the belief that you need to become a corporate, but you need to understand that, of course, you need to become a corporate, but there can be good corporates, right? And a really valuable exercise to do with your co-founders is to map out what is your picture of a good enterprise, what is your picture of a bad enterprise? There is large companies there who manage culture. It is possible. And don't just say, okay, there is no better way than becoming a bad enterprise. It's just what happens when companies grow. I don't think so. This belief I really fight. But then when it comes to the definition of what is now a good enterprise exactly, what is now a bad enterprise exactly there, you can negotiate, right? And you can focus on the underlying intention and feeling that you want to have with one another and then also with your team. And there usually people are well aligned. Everyone likes to work in a good company. But also there is this truth that not all relationships are meant to be forever. So sometimes if there is 2 fundamental differences, right? I think you need to change who's on board, right? And this can affect everyone, right? And it's also not necessarily a bad thing. There is no right and wrong in the world. It just there is no the fit not anymore. And it's also a typical founder challenge that when you grow in the company, since your role changes so much, it might also be completely normal that you stop and that you enjoy it less. And then just ask yourself why you're really doing the company, right? If there is a better way to fulfill your life vision, mission in a different place. And the thing is, you can keep still this positive attitude towards it. And that is a mindset that really helps to put things in context and to zoom out and don't obsess over the details.
They're very interesting and I think very worthwhile advice. To switch gears a bit in the conversation and switch towards basically from user lane, I've noticed that you have different sales models, both self-service and inbound / outbound, and also target multiple segments, like SMB, enterprise, all at the same time. I definitely believe you didn't start with that, but it's evolved over time. Okay, maybe share your learnings, maybe start with the sales models first. Like, well, what are your learnings to launching like different sales models or having different sales models at the same time in a company, and which conflicts arise and how do you deal with those?
Yeah, that's a really good thing, because one thing that is typically a good idea is if you're trying out various things, if you're seeing how might all of these work, and then you double down on what works. And thinking in bets, thinking in experiments is also really valuable. And I think if you're in SaaS, and especially in B2B SaaS, it really depends on your time to value. Do you have a quick win in your product? Is it something that in less than 5 minutes makes a new user realize, oh, this is great. I want to now, I'm considering now to pay for it. And you can probably turn any complex product and add this quick win early on, but it really depends also on who you're targeting, right? On what is the best way to fulfill your vision. So we have that vision of helping anyone to use any software instantly, and where this gap between the humans and the technology is, I think, the widest is in many large corporations, where they have dozens of softwares that they use, dozens of applications, a whole landscape that they want to also connect. And this is strategically the smarter path, the smarter market for user lane to attack. So then when you are an enterprise, you need to really make sure that your enterprise clients don't end up in your self-serving model and get lost. And you know, we also identified that with user lane, you're not going to have a quick win early on. It needs to be integrated onto your application. This is a browser extension or something. And then you need to build some content, and then you need to send it to someone. And then this other person is being trained on the software. This is all a long journey. It's not something that you do in 5 minutes. And this is why we have chosen to not offer a self-serving model. So there is all these channels. They end up with a sales rep and with a demo and with a trial phase and maybe a proof of concept also. And things really change whether you sell $20 per month tickets, 200 or 2000 or even beyond. And one article I really, really want to recommend to figure this out for your business, because it really depends, is 5 ways to build a $100 million dollar business from Christoph Jahns. I think this article really also shaped this understanding for us back in the day. And then depending on which animal you hunt, you will see what I mean when you read the article, your approach needs to differ. And it's really well visualized there.
Usually what you also see once you have sort of like product market fit, but you're in order to reach your full potential and you start serving different customer segments, how have you managed that transition from basically focusing on one customer group towards basically expanding? And were there some sort of fundamental principles in there which you think are worth sharing?
The fundamental principle is you need to really thoroughly analyze where your customers are different, but also where they are the same. And often that is based on anecdotes and on individual data points. And beware that the picture of the customer is easily distorted. So really doing proper research here and analyzing differences and similarities of customers is really important. And then in our case, we discovered that from a product functionality standpoint, our customers are very similar, right? They bigger customers and smaller customers, they don't differ so much. Everyone likes a good UX, you know, why not? And especially when it comes to enterprise, many things are hygiene features. It depends a lot on how you manage your infrastructure, how you manage your software development process, how you manage data security, data privacy, and you need to prioritize this. And it's just not things that you do in the beginning. And it's also, from a go-to-market perspective, enterprise takes time. And with that, I don't just mean the sales cycle, but also in building up your reputation on the market. Enterprises are risk-averse. They are less likely to buy from a vendor who has been only on the market from the first or second year. So you need to really have this long breath and to keep working on it. And this is why I think it's a good idea to start with SMBs and then move up market. I think this is the best practice you can usually do. And even though there is no perfect answer, but analyzing who are your customers, where are they different, where are they the same, maybe in product, working ahead. And then, so for example, building typical enterprise things like single sign-on already, even though no one requested it, but because you know that your future customers are going to need it. And it also positions you on the feature comparison that you're going to run into with many enterprises. But we, in our case, also saw that the actual functionality requirements, what people expect from the product, and also how we serve our vision or our purpose of the product does not really differ based on how big the customer is. And this is already making it easier, at least, right?
Yeah, if every segment is very different, it means that every time, you know, you have to find new product market fit, which I like to use the Ansoff matrix a lot. Means that every time you get into the diversification square, which is usually a very risky bet as a company. So I'm happy that for you there are similarities.
And one thing I also want to share for before we are wrapping up is I want to really say, as a founder, enjoy it while you're doing it. People have told me already before, like, as an entrepreneur, you're going to have mood swings, ups and downs. You're going to feel like nothing is working. You're going to feel like you're a superhero the next day. And our days are typically long, but the years are short. So when you look back on the past time, when you look yourself in the mirror, make sure that you're still remaining yourself. Of course, there is high expectations from everyone and a lot of responsibility to bear, but don't lose touch with yourself and find your own style. Everyone else already exists. And this is some insight that I'm lucky that I have received early on. And I think it really helps to deal with any issues arising in the company, especially the one about burning out, but also about defining the culture. Be yourself, right? You're yourself. You are the best thing that you have. So express that in the company. And also the type of company that you're building is your product. The product of the founder is the company. And that is something I want to pass along.
Yeah, I think it's really valuable advice that you give here, like authenticity and also daring to be authentic. I mean, the good thing of these books and this podcast and everything is there. People start also thinking that they have to be like, for instance, like Felix, whereas they can just choose their own path. Just finally, is there anything that you like to share that I did not ask for?
It connects well with what I've previously said, and it is, I would say, read a novel every now and then. Don't just read business books, you know, which of course is interesting to capture the learnings from other people who have been there, done that, but it also gets you into this mood of, oh, I need to be like this and I need to be like that. And it helps to read a novel, something completely unrelated to business. And it also is interesting to shape character, to shape personality. And you can learn a lot also from there. And it also is a nice change of mind. So I really, really recommend that next to just reading all these books about how to scale, how to run your business. And another content piece that I'd like to hint is my Medium page, because as I said, written communication is becoming more important as you scale the company. And one exercise is also writing your thoughts down in a structured manner. So just blogging for the sake of the exercise of writing things in a structured manner is really, really helpful. And also something that potentially helps other people.
Thank you for listening. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a super high growth new year. I look forward to seeing you next year and get back to you in the second week of January.